This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Needs. Visit kpft.org for information about the CAB and the Program Council. KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And Jack, why don't you tell us what's on the show tonight?
Oh, okay. Well, David Elliott should be calling in as we speak. And he's going to give us an update from Washington. And it should be real interesting after the inauguration. And then we're going to be talking to Randall Terrell. He is the political director of Equality Texas. He's actually the lobbyist. And that's what Equality Texas does up in Austin. Then in the second hour, we're going to be talking to people from the Mardi Gras here, one of the courts that is going to be doing some events. And then Brian Riedel is going to talk to us about the GLBTQ History Digital Station Project, which a bunch of community people are starting to work on or talk about forming that. And then finally, we're going to be talking about a Valentine's Day event that's coming up by Impact Houston. And, of course, our regular features, which includes This Way Out News Wrap and some other items from the News Wrap. And we're glad to be back after it's been 3 weeks since we've been on the air.
Yeah. We've missed you guys.
So, let's go right to David Elliott. And anything interesting happened in the past month, David?
Well, you know, Jack, you know, I have to tell you, for more than a year now, I've been discussing presidential politics. I've been discussing the egregious excesses of the former White House administration. I've been discussing the dwindling economy, the country in anguish, our hope, our dream, our vision for the future and of the future. And we've been doing this with broad strokes. After all, my thinking has been, what broadly benefits the progressive community also broadly benefits the LGBT community. But tonight, Jack, I want to go in a different direction. I want to specifically drill down and look at what LGBT Americans might anticipate from an Obama administration during the next year or two. Is okay. That okay?
Okay, yes. That sounds good. Let us know.
So, I'm going to ask you a bit of a trick question here. At 12.01 p.m. on Tuesday, January 20th, something very important happened to LGBT Americans. Jack, I'm going to put you on the spot. What happened?
Well, we were no longer in the outhouse.
Excellent. Excellent.
Now we're going to see where exactly we're going to end up.
That's
from there.
Good. That's good.
Well, you know, what I expected you to say was, well, you know, we got a new president.
That's right. That's what happened. Obama became president.
Right. But, you know, something else happened. Actually, he became president, I don't know, 12:05. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, officially, it was 12 o'clock.
Right, officially. But some people were paying attention, and I want to let you know about something really, really dramatic that happened at 12:01 p.m. that day. At that exact moment, somebody somewhere, I don't know where, somebody somewhere pressed a button, and the official government website, whitehouse.gov, ceased being an extension of the old era, and it became an extension of the new era, the Obama era. And at that exact moment, what did it say about LGBT rights? Well, I'm going to give you a little bit of a taste of what it said, and there's some bad here, and there's some good here. But let me just share this with you, okay?
Please do.
It said at 12:01 p.m. on January 20th, quote, President Obama supports full civil unions that give same-sex couples legal rights and privileges equal to those of married couples. It said, and this is under a category called support for the LGBT community. It said, Obama also believes we need to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act and enact legislation that would ensure that the 1,100 plus federal legal rights and benefits currently provided on the basis of marital status are extended to same-sex couples in civil unions and other legally recognized unions. Now, here's what's important. If we are to take Obama at his word, if we're going to parse this language, then this could actually have a profound effect on LGBT couples in Texas. And you're probably thinking, what in the world is David talking about?
Yeah, what is that about Texas?
Well, hear me out. If you follow this, if you consider that Obama favors and is in support of a gay and trans inclusive version of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and everything that it represents, then we're left with this. Officials with the gay litigation group Lambda Legal and the American Civil Liberties Union's Lesbian and Gay Rights Project. Say that if you look at Obama's language very carefully, he would allow same-sex couples living in conservative states like Texas to obtain a civil union in a state like Vermont and then return to their home states to receive all of the federal rights and benefits of marriage, including Social Security survivor benefits.
That would be profound.
Yes.
And that would supersede any state constitutional amendment.
Yes. And it would include the right to file joint income tax returns. It would include hospital rights, being able to make the decision for your partner. Now, it would not include any state benefits related to marriage.
Right.
So this is something that we're going to be looking toward and taking a really, really hard look at. Now, you know, something that needs to be, you know, pointed out here. If Congress moves ahead with legislation providing federally guaranteed marriage-related rights for LGBT people in the area of civil unions and domestic partnerships, then LGBT people in Texas could really, really start looking at these benefits. And that's something that's really important to consider. Now, there is an elephant in the room here. And it's not just a GOP elephant.
It's not the Republican elephant, huh?
Right. The element is DOMA, which Obama and the Democrats in the Congress are probably not going to move to rescind in the next 2 years. But it's also the fact that same-sex marriage increasingly is going to be an issue that is going to play out on the state level. And I want to say something really important about this, because we are entering into you know, the state legislative session in so many different states, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 states that actually are going to be considering same-sex marriage bills this year. Vermont, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island, Maine, Illinois, Hawaii, Washington, Minnesota. Of those, two of those states, Vermont and New Jersey, are probably going to legalize same-sex marriage this year. That is going to double the number of states that legalize same-sex marriage. Already we have same-sex marriage in Massachusetts and Connecticut. It looks like Vermont and New Jersey are going to add to those. New Jersey is going to become the first state in the country that whose legislature is going to pass same-sex marriage without a gun being placed to their head, so to speak. In other words, the legislature is going to do it there because it's the right thing to do, not because any court has ordered them to do so. Now, we've got an outside chance in New York and Rhode Island, but it's probably not going to happen. And in the other states that I mentioned, Maine, Illinois, Hawaii, Washington, and Minnesota, bills are going to advance, but they will not, you know, go all the way. So things are looking up, folks. We are on the way. It seems so difficult because we take two steps forward with the election of Barack Obama, and it seems like we take one step back because it seems like we can't make any progress in terms of, you know, civil liberties. But it is happening, and we are moving forward, and it's a great thing.
Well, not only GLBT issues, but how do you feel about overall the appointments that Obama has made?
You know, Jack, you put me on the spot there in a good way. I feel good about the appointments he's made in terms of diversity. We don't have any openly lesbian and gay cabinet members. We do have a whole lot of openly lesbian and gay cabinet members, or just right below that level, you know, sub-cabinet members. We've got great diversity in terms of gender and race. My concern is that we have cabinet members who haven't paid their taxes.
Yes, yes.
No kidding.
And, you know, who have some conflicts of interest. And that's a real problem.
Interesting. Well, and overall, since you work in the progressive movement up there in Washington, there must be just a whole other light of a feeling there.
Oh, you know, Jack, my organization has been chairing the Obama Progressive Transition Team. We've been kind of a conduit between the administration and 20 or 30 or 40 different groups.
Really? Wow.
And, you know, including the Human Rights Campaign and National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and Planned Parenthood and all sorts of unions like SEIU and ASPE and stuff. And it is a new day. It's a new dawn. But there are so many challenges. And, you know, chief among these, you can't talk about anything without talking about the economic crisis.
Yes, yes.
And the number of Americans who have lost their jobs, who are losing their jobs and their health care every single week. And it's devastating. And, you know, children who are going to bed at night hungry. Just the devastation that, you know, the economic crisis has wreaked upon the country. It's sort of like, you know, before we deal with this, we can't deal with anything else. And it's painful and it's hurtful and it's just really really incredible and tough to deal with.
Yes, yes, it is, and it's going to take years before we sort of get back on track. It looks like.
Well, it is. I mean, if we pass the jobs and economic recovery package immediately, we might be back on track in 2 years. That's how bad it is. If we don't pass it, it's probably going to be 6 or 8 years. And, you know, it's the worst time that our country has seen, you know, economically speaking, in a very, very, very long time. And, you know, there are, you know, comparisons, you know, comparing it to the Great Depression, you know, comparing it to the 1970s when Americans were lining up in, you know, gas lines, you know, during the Arab oil embargo. And no comparison really, really works. But every single day, I'm seeing friends of mine lose their jobs. Every day, Jack. Every
yes,
day.
Yes, I certainly know the feeling. It also is rather, you know, although there seems to be some good feelings up there with the fact that, you know, he's already talked about closing Guantanamo. He's already talked about changing the, or, you know, allowing the EPA laws to allow the California cars, and a number of other things that the making it easier to form unions. And these are all just really quick things that he did.
Well, you know, it is true. We have all of a sudden, immediately, the most progressive, the most proactive president we've had in American history. But it's, you know, how much can you do, how quickly, and what effect is it going to be in the long run? And the most important question is, how quickly can you stimulate this economy right now, right here, because people are hurting?
Yes. Now, a couple other things that I don't know if you heard about, but one is that Anise Parker has announced that she's going to be running for mayor officially today.
Jack, I just saw that online today, and I was incredibly excited by that. I just incredibly excited by that.
Well, and the interesting thing right now is that she's looked at as sort of the center candidate, and the and it sort of said it's her race to lose now, meaning that she right now looks like she has the best chance of winning. Of course, in politics, anything can change at any time. But the fact that she has been elected 6 times citywide, 3 times for city council, 3 times as controller, and now she's going to be running. And it was really interesting. I was listening to KUHF, the NPR station, this morning in their newscast, and it was all very positive, their report about her, you know, seeking to become mayor.
Well, Jack, you will remember when you and I, years and years ago, when I was managing editor at the Texas Triangle, and we endorsed her for city council.
Yes.
And it was such a big thing when she won that race.
Right.
And now to have such a competent, smart woman running for mayor of Houston, fantastic. I mean, this is history in the making. And, you know, the election is in November. And I just really look forward to finding out, you know, how it's going to turn out. Obviously, she starts out as the front runner.
Yes. The other sort of rumor that's running around the street now is that Sheila Jackson Lee may be being picked up by Hillary Clinton to work in the State Department.
Well, that's really, really an interesting rumor, and I'm kind of shocked to hear it. But, you know, let's just see how that
yes.
plays out. I mean, the idea of Sheila Jackson Lee working in the State Department is just really, really interesting.
Yes, yes. And that, of course, would mean a wide-open election here, possibly in May. And whenever you have an election like that to fill a seat, it's you know, there's no primary. There is the election, and then there's usually a runoff if you don't get 50%. So it's wide open. There's no Republican or Democratic primary.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I have to add on to that, and Jack, and you know, all of your listeners know this, that you all have a really, really exciting U.S. Senate race coming up.
Yes, we do. Very possibly in 2 years, or was it? When is it?
Two years.
Yeah, 2 years. If Kay Bailey Hutchinson decides to run for governor, that would leave that wide open. And, of course, we don't have a statewide elected Democrat in Texas. And things are changing, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, Texas is not going blue, but going purple right
yes.
now.
Yes.
They are going in the same direction that North Carolina and Virginia have gone in recent years. And then 4, 6, 8 years down the line, Texas is going in the way of California. Texas will be a blue state. It's not a question of if it will happen. It's a question of when it will happen. And it's going to be an exciting thing to see.
Well, David, thank you very much for joining us, and tell us what you do for your day job.
Well, for my day job right now, Jack, I am the communications director for U.S. Action and our sister organization, TrueMajority.org. You can find us on the web at usaction.org and TrueMajority.org.
And we'll be going to This Way Out in just a second, but I want to remind you that we have a new website, queervoices.org, and you can see what's coming up in the rest of the show if you just log on to that website. You're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending January 31st, 2009. It was widely reported this week that the world will have its first openly lesbian prime minister. Iceland's 66-year-old social affairs minister, Jóhanna Sigurðardóttir, would also be her country's first female PM. In a country where LGBT and heterosexual culture seem to meld seamlessly, Icelanders generally consider Johanna's sexuality to be a non-issue. Iceland has been particularly hard hit by the global economic meltdown, and public outrage, including the largest anti-government demonstration in years, forced the center-conservative coalition to resign. Johanna has been picked by a new center-left coalition to be the caretaker PM until national elections, which have tentatively been scheduled for May 9th. Her Social Democrats have 18 seats in Parliament. The Greens have 9, the Progressives have 7, and the Liberals have 4. The former government-leading Conservative Independence Party currently holds 25 seats. The parties winning the largest percentage of votes in the election will decide who the next permanent prime minister will be.
Most observers are saying that Johanna's party won't have enough votes for her to remain as prime minister beyond the May elections. But despite the general public's overwhelming distaste for other ministers in the ruling coalition, she was recently named by 73% of respondents in Iceland's Gallup poll as her nation's most popular government official. Johanna began her slow rise to power as a flight attendant in 1962 and is a longtime union organizer. She first won election to Iceland's parliament in 1978 and served as the country's Minister of Social Affairs for several governments from 1987 to 1994. She returned to lead the ministry again in May 2007 and has held that post since then. She's known for allocating generous amounts of public funding to help the disabled, the elderly, and domestic violence organizations, and her refusal to accept a government-subsidized luxury car and personal chauffeur has endeared her to the public. She's seen by many as a unifying character capable of easing tensions in Iceland. Johanna has for several years been in a civil union with 54-year-old author, journalist, and playwright Jónína Leósdóttir. Those unions give such couples the same legal rights as heterosexual marriage.
Colombia's Constitutional Court ruled this week that same-gender couples must be given the same rights as heterosexuals in common-law marriages. The ruling, which specifically includes state benefits and residency and housing protections, builds upon earlier high court decisions giving gay and lesbian couples inheritance, pension, health, and social security rights. The court has specifically said in its rulings, however, that the creation of civil unions for lesbian and gay couples was an issue for the country's legislature. Lobbying by the country's dominant Roman Catholic Church, which threatened supportive lawmakers with denial of the sacraments, doomed such a bill in Colombia's parliament last year. All the advances for same-gender couples in the South American country have come from constitutional court rulings.
A U.S. federal court this week denied the request of Proposition 8 backers to block access to the names and addresses of some 36,000 people who donated money in support of California's same-gender marriage ban, which passed by more than 52% in November. The two groups spearheading the effort, ProtectMarriage.com and the National Organization for Marriage California, claim that donors have been the targets of threats, vandalism, and public protests. But the court upheld the state's 35-year-old Political Reform Act, which makes the identities of those giving $100 or more to ballot initiatives or politicians a matter of public record. U.S. District Judge Morrison England Jr. ruled that if there ever needs to be sunshine on a political issue, it is with a ballot measure. Yes on 8 campaign officials said hundreds of people have alleged harassment, intimidation, or threats. They argued that First Amendment rights to be free from retaliation outweighed the state's interest in disclosure. According to court records, however, only one of the 9 people mentioned in the lawsuit claiming harassment actually donated to the campaign. The other 8 worked as volunteers, spoke at campaign rallies, or displayed yard signs and bumper stickers. California Attorney General Jerry Brown and Secretary of State Deborah Bowen have both said that people should file criminal reports if they experience harassment. They wrote that Prop 8 backers should not be given a special privilege of anonymity for themselves alone. While the federal district court ruling prevents Prop 8 supporters from obtaining a preliminary injunction against the state's release of further donor names in the coming week, the Associated Press reported that the decision is still likely to be appealed. The California Supreme Court is expected to hear oral arguments in the legal challenge to the constitutionality of Proposition 8 itself in March.
The news was not as good for LGBT people in other parts of the world. The government of Bahrain, a Middle Eastern constitutional monarchy, is cracking down on a number of online social networking sites, including gay and lesbian sites. The country is considered to be more liberal than its other Islamic neighbors, like Saudi Arabia, but same-gender sex is still a social taboo and a criminal offense there. LGBT activists worry that the denial of access in Bahrain to such popular online sites as Gaydar.com will force more courageous gays and lesbians to meet in public, placing them at risk for harm from family, friends, and strangers.
The announcement that Lebanon's LGBT rights group, Helem, has won the prestigious Philippa D'Souza Award from IGLHRC, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, was tempered by reports this week that 2 gay men were assaulted and arrested by members of the country's military. The 2 were apparently having sex in the lobby of an uninhabited building in a Beirut suburb when Lebanese army soldiers discovered them. They were dragged out into the street, humiliated, and severely beaten. Bystanders eventually intervened, but after spending the night in a military barracks, the men were handed over to civil authorities and reportedly remain in custody. Lebanon's penal code punishes sex that contradicts the laws of nature with up to a year in prison. The Philippa D'Souza Award recognizes the courage and effectiveness of groups or individuals dedicated to improving the human rights of people who are stigmatized and abused because of their sexuality or HIV status. Helem said on its website that it is high time that the country's lawmakers looked at an obsolete, ridiculous law that condemns and punishes homosexuality in Lebanon. At a time when gay marriage is permitted in many countries, the authorities hypocritically deny the simplest expression of reality, which they will have to face one day or another.
IGLHRC says that arrests of gay people also continue in Egypt, where, as we've previously reported, anti-gay abuse by government authorities has escalated in recent years. The latest IGLHRC citation comes from a January 10th report from Cairo by Almohit, a pan-Arab online news portal that read, "Security services destroyed a network of homosexuals following complaints to the morality unit of the Interior Ministry." After surveillance, the report continues, the detectives found out that all of the people who visited the apartment were gay, and the location was a place set up for gays to commit sodomy. The ringleaders of the gay prostitution operation included a top producer at Egyptian TV, a fabric merchant, an accountant, and a young man who worked with foreign press. Following the raid, 8 people were arrested, and police confiscated gay pornography on the detainees' computers and on their cell phones.
And finally, far from the Middle East, but in another chilling example of government abuse, Equality Maryland, the U.S. state's largest LGBT rights organization, was among at least 32 groups classified as security threats in a state police database. Targeted organizations also included Amnesty International and the Hiroshima-Nagasaki Commemoration Committee, all deemed to be terrorists by the state's Homeland Security and Intelligence Division, which also kept dossiers on at least 50 individual activists. For example, police files described Equality Maryland's plans to hold rallies outside the State House in Annapolis to press for reversal of the state's ban on same-gender marriage among its alleged terrorist activities. Copies of the files were obtained through a lawsuit by the American Civil Liberties Union of Maryland. A dozen Democratic lawmakers at a press conference held to condemn the files this week promised to introduce legislation to prevent future surveillance of nonviolent groups. According to a story in the Baltimore Sun, the spying program began in 2005 and continued for at least a year under Republican Governor Robert Ehrlich, who left office in 2007. He's denied knowing about the program, but Sheila Hickson, lead sponsor of the Freedom of Association and Assembly Protection Act of 2009 in the House of Delegates, said it was clear that state police get their orders from the executive department. They don't just decide on their own to spy on a group because they have nothing else to do. Under the proposed bill, police would need reasonable, articulated suspicion of actual criminal activity before they could conduct surveillance.
That's News Wrap for the week ending January 31st, 2009. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
This is Queer Voices.
was Horse from her 2007 CD, Can't Break My Heart. This is Queer Voices.
Well, we move from Washington to Austin to talk about continuing on the subject of politics. But before we introduce our guest, I want to mention that Equality Texas is going to have an event on the 5th of February, which is called the Houston Mary Mary Martini Mixer. And it's going to be at Momentum Audi at 2315 Richmond Avenue. And if you'd like some more information, you can go to their website, equalitytexas.org.
That's Thursday, right?
Yes.
What time?
It is, good question, it is from 6:30.
All right.
6:30. Randall Terrell is with us. He is the lobbyist for Equality Texas, and the legislature's in session now. So what's happening, Randall?
Not a thing, Jack. How are you doing?
I guess that's good news.
Yeah. Well, I'd probably be wrong if I actually stuck to that, but the Senate's just named their committees. It's blown up. Over some internal rules. The House has elected a moderate Republican who actually has endorsed Planned Parenthood, and it's settled down. So there's a lot going on, and it's a little bit different from last session.
Have they picked the committees for the House yet?
They have set up the committees, but the last I heard today, they had not named who was going to be on them. I expect that probably this week or the first part of next week. And I was meeting with an aligned lobbyist today, and I was asking him how he thought the session was going to go, and he said, ask me after the committees are named. And that's pretty much what it is for all of us right now.
Well, does this session look like that we may actually be able to make some progress rather than just being on the defensive?
That's certainly my hope. I was very hopeful of that until adoption initiative was passed in Arkansas this past November, and I'm a little bit worried, you know, when I'm talking about it on the phone, I'm sure it's not going to escape anybody else's notice, but in Arkansas, they did a public initiative to ban single-parent foster and adoptive homes, and it's just a surrogate way of attacking LGBT foster parents and adoptive parents. That's been tried here in the past. There are some versions of that, and I'm a little bit worried about that. But otherwise, I think we've got a real chance to move some great legislation. We got several hearings on our bills last session, or the bills we chose to back. One of them actually made it to the floor of the House, but died before consideration when the deadline passed. This time, I'm hoping we might get 2, 3, 4 bills to the floor of the House, and then I'm sneaking around trying to find some way to get the Senate to move on issues. That's going to be a little bit tougher.
Now you actually have to have somebody from the House and Senate to sponsor it.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, the House, either chamber, a member can file a bill. But once you get something to pass the House, then you need a sponsor in the Senate or vice versa.
I guess the one thing that probably that is a good point is that the state is not in debt.
Well, the state can't actually get debt, supposedly. But we're going to be, I don't know if you heard today, but Dewhurst and Joe Strauss, the Speaker of the House, just asked the Comptroller to give them advice on how to do a state budget with a 2.5% reduction from the proposed budget, because everybody thinks we're losing money, we're going to be short of money left and right. So we'll see how that goes.
So they basically want to start by cutting programs.
Well, that's what they've been doing for years. I don't think Rick Perry's ever submitted a budget request where he didn't propose cutting everything. Usually the requests go out, say, to state agencies saying, how would you fulfill your budget with, you know, the current amount or 5% less or 10% less. I don't think he's ever given them an option to do 5% more.
And what about some of our allies up there, like Planned Parenthood and some of the other progressive, are they hoping for some good, have a good session this time?
Well, I'd hate to speak for them.
I understand,
but I will tell you that there are some deep sighs of relief coming out of a couple of those organizations. I think the new Speaker of the House, plus the partisan breakdown of the House, which is 74-76 with a couple more Republicans and Democrats, mean that it's going to be much more bipartisan and probably less extremist. And Strauss has been quoted and has been interviewed and says he has very little taste for wedge politics, which means that those social conservative wedge activist bills that target divisive issues within the community might not be tolerated. He's also said that anybody who can get the votes can bring something to the floor. So, you know, maybe if a voter ID bill or another attack on choice can get the votes, it might come to the floor, but it might not. I think we're going to be looking at least in the House, a much more conciliatory session.
Yes.
I think in the Senate, we're going to see some more party politics, though.
Although, you know, we're still definitely in the minority, but it does seem like a vast relief from the last session.
Well, yeah, I think it is. I think we're, you know, completely worried about how the House was going to shape up, and particularly under Craddock's leadership over the last three sessions. With Strauss there, things are looking better. He's going to get heat from his own party for not being extreme enough. On the other hand, the Senate, like I said, might blow up. And with 31 senators, only 12 Democrats, there's quite an imbalance of power over there.
But yeah, like I said, it's still Republicans have control over there. But now, what about a lot of the Democrats that were sort of lining up with Craddock in the past? Have they are they becoming a little braver to be able to support some?
I think everybody's kissed and made up in the House. There was a lot of stress about all the Craddock D's, as they called them, the people that have frequently liberal Democrats who had voted to keep Craddock in power, to help, I guess, their districts out by themselves getting better, more powerful committee chairs and positions like that. But, the Democratic leadership had said that, you know, once they didn't vote for Craddock this session, then everything was going to be forgiven. I have yet to see, because we haven't seen how the committee appointments shake out. There might be some punishment going on. I don't know that. We'll have to wait and see.
Can you talk about some of the things that you would like to be able to work on this session?
Oh, absolutely. We've already got the bill filed, and we've been working very closely with a number of representatives. Off the top of my head, Alonzo out of Dallas has filed HB 197, which is a non-discrimination and insurance bill. Let me see, Rodriguez here out of Travis County has filed a hospital visitation medical decision-making bill that would make sure that partners could visit their loved ones in the hospital if there was no, like, legal document giving them that right outright. HB 538 is by Villarreal out of San Antonio, and it's a straight-up an employment non-discrimination bill that would amend the labor code to protect people based on sexual orientation and gender identity or expression. A couple more. House Bill 616 by Mark Vesey out of Fort Worth. It's calling for a study of the Jamesburg Junior Hate Crimes Act. You know, if you remember, sexual preference is a protected status. And I use preference, not orientation, because that's the language they use, but it's protected status under the bill. And since the bill was passed, there have been over 1,800 crimes investigated as potential hate crimes, but only 8 recorded prosecutions. So there's something wrong there, and we'd like to look at that. And then one that just got filed, this last Thursday is by Neistat out of Austin, and it's HB 861. And it would require the UC and A&M systems to provide insurance benefits to, quote, other qualified individuals, unquote. Now, while it leaves up to the systems how to define those, we would be really making the case that that would provide insurance benefits for same-sex and other unmarried partners, which would be a wonderful thing to happen to both the systems and in Texas. I think we've got a number of other things we're working on that haven't gotten filed yet. I know that we've had several conversations with, you know, some of our champions from Houston, particularly Farrar and Garnett Coleman, Ellen Cohen, moving forward on some of our issues. But until those are filed, I can't really speak about them. So.
Okay. I know one of the bills that were, you know, we talked to HISD about was the no bullying bill.
Right. And there's two versions. I tell you, anti-bullying is a real hot topic these days, and we've been trying to work with the Texas Safe Schools Coalition, trying to come up with minimum standards for school districts that would to an act that would protect kids, because we really want to interdict the bullying and harassment, not punish kids after it's happened, but actually keep it from happening in the first place. And that seems to be a real hot topic. There are a lot of legislators and a lot of groups interested in that. There are two ways to go about that, I think. One is, well, two or three things you can do. One, you can do a reporting bill, which requires the schools simply to record and report incidents of bullying and harassment so that we can actually define the problem. Another is to set those minimum standards that I talked about. And there's a third, and Garnet Coleman filed this several times before, which is the Dignity for All Students Act. And that is simply a statement that kids should not be discriminated against because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. It includes all the protected classes that you typically see, but specifically includes those too. And any one or all of those approaches would be, I think, a great help to kids in school.
Wow, that sounds, all these things sound, you know, really positive. Of course, I know, you know, filing and getting something passed is a long way off, but
yeah, that's true. But I think you're right, and I'm a determined optimist, which I kind of have
yes.
To but you know, the times are changing, and I think one of the, you know, just for, you know, inside baseball thing here. There was a Republican polling outfit that released back in late November, early December, a poll that they had done. And among other things, it gave Republicans reason to be worried. In fact, that was the whole point of it. But it gave a couple of things, one of which is that young people don't care about social conservative issues as much as the older generation does. And they really want to see, I think, a lot more tolerance for individual choices and individual lifestyles and individuals. And, you know, obviously that would pick up sexual orientation and gender identity. And I think the message of the poll was, if the Republicans fail to heed that message, then they're going to be turned out of office by the next generation.
Although a lot of them are in, well, I don't know if a lot of them, but a good number of them are probably in very safe districts.
Well, the Republicans, yeah. I think that the message of the poll was that, you know, despite all the gerrymandering that's been going on, is that no matter where you are, the younger generation is changing. So what was once a safe district may no longer be. I don't know if you've kept track, but there have been a number of conservative Republicans over the last several cycles who have been turned out of office, arguably on the case that they were too conservative and more conservative than their districts. So we're seeing a much more moderate base of legislators come into the legislature, even whether they're Democrat or Republican. They're certainly more moderate than their predecessors.
Really? Wow, that's interesting.
It's encouraging.
I had one question to follow up on the bullying start, and not just bullying in schools and stuff like that. Has there ever been, are they working on anything about cyber bullying?
Yes. I have seen several competing definitions. They're very similar. You can do something as simple as amend the definition of harassment to pick up harassment through electronic communication. I know that, I think it's Zaffirini has a bill out of the Senate that does exactly that. And I've seen, I think Farrar's got a bill in draft, whoops, I shouldn't have said that, that might do that. And a couple of other representatives are also looking at that. I know that, you know, there are some supporters and other groups that we work with that have concerns about how much you can prohibit speech that would normally not be offensive. And the example I use is, you know, one kid texts another kid that says, you're a jerk. Well, you know, alone that's protected speech, but if 1,000 kids do that in a 24-hour period, if something goes viral, then that speech has gotten to be so pervasive and disruptive as to be harmful to the kid and the educational environment. And I think that's what we're trying to pick up there, but cyberbullying is a huge problem, and we're certainly looking at ways of trying to interact with that and take care of it.
Yeah, because not only computer as far as cyber, but also texting and the like. Yeah, it's very pervasive.
Yeah, everything from, you know, texting is one thing. Putting a negative profile up on Facebook or MySpace or, you know, whichever one the kids use these days.
And, or YouTube.
YouTube, yeah. And you know, and I think that there's a jurisdictional issue that's come up with how do you discipline off-campus behavior?
Yes.
And that's where you focus upon, you know, behavior that's disruptive of the school environment. But, you know, for the kids who are being bullied, and I don't want to downplay this at all. There's quite a number of kids who have wound up taking their own lives in a very short period of time from the onset of this type of behavior because there's no escape. Everywhere they go, somebody's giving them a negative message, negative reinforcement. And it's a huge problem, and something certainly has to be done.
Oh, good. It's good to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other questions about how things might be going?
When things get really rolling in the legislature, when would you expect to have some hearings? Will they start immediately, or will they be somewhere in March?
They'll be in March. I think there's a House rules deadline on you know, filing bills and when hearings can actually start. Unless something is an emergency. So we're not going to get going on hearings, at least until March. They're going to name the committees. They'll start some of that work, and I think they'll do some preliminary hearings, but none of the real stuff on bills will really get going.
It all seems to come down to the last minute, doesn't it?
Well, you know, when you've only got 140 days to begin with, you start off at the last minute, and you're just shaving time from that. I think, you know, that's a great lead-in to mention our lobby day, which we've got scheduled for March 2nd. And we would love people to know about it. It's the
well, what is Lobby Day?
Lobby Day is when we come. You come up to Austin, and we make you a lobbyist for the day. And we'll have a reception and some informational materials and some practice courses, and just, you know, kind of talk to people about what it means to go out and carry the message of equality to various representatives.
Now, and, I mean, for example, I'm in Garnett Coleman's district now. Garnett's probably the least person that needs to be lobbied. Now, if I came up there, what would you do with me?
We would put you together with some folks. Now, Jack, I'm just assuming you're gay. I don't know that. I don't want to out you here or anything. But
I'm definitely queer.
Okay, well, that's close enough. And what we try to do is match you up with some other folks and, you know, try to get a good balance of, you know, allied, gay, lesbian, transgender, and put you in a group of folks who are going to go from office to office to make sure that we hit every legislator's office at least once, probably twice during the day. That's every senator, every House member. And carry the message about our bills and about equality and need for it. And then a very empowering thing, everybody didn't have to speak. In fact, usually in a group you may find the one or two or three strongest speakers to tell the stories. But when you show up in a group like that, it's very personal, and it brings home our message. And we don't have members, you know, coming in from every district, but we make sure that every representative does get a visit. And then everybody will get one or two visits in the morning, and then we'll have lunch, and then we'll turn everybody loose to go visit their own representatives. So you can go and hang out, but you can go and visit Garnett Coleman's office, for instance. And that way, they know that their constituents are there.
Well, I guess what's really important, though, is that a lot of people that are in the major cities came from other parts of Texas, rural parts of Texas. And it's really important that those representatives know that there's GLBT people, that families of GLBT people that are living in those districts.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm from Stephenville, Texas, which is a small town outside of Fort Worth and, you know, a good 60 miles from anything. And yet there are gay, lesbian, transgender folks living and working there. And it was one of the most conservative representatives that we've got at the Capitol. And, you know, I literally have heard from a representative say, I don't have any gay people in my district. And I think we need to cure that attitude because it's a detrimental attitude. You know, obviously the studies show that people are more likely to change their attitude to LGBT folks if they know someone personally. And we'd like to help with those introductions. But, you know, in terms of who should come to Austin for Lobby Day, we're working with every ally group we can get. We're working, you know, with PFLAG and HRC and Stonewall and Log Cabin and all these groups. We're happy to partner with anybody to bring folks in. And last session, we had over 200 folks come and lobby the Capitol all day. And we'd like to shoot for 400.
And how do they do that? Is there information on your website?
Absolutely. Just go to our website. It's on the front page. And it tells you how to sign up for Lobby Day. You may, in fact, see Facebook groups or MySpace groups about it. But we really need people to sign up on our page as well so that we know You know, you have to put in your address so that you know who your representative and who your senator is as well. So that way we know how to match you up and where to send you. And we'll have maps and we'll have bill information. We'll have, if you're really scared, we'll match you with somebody who's a professional. If you're a professional, you know, you get to mentor some folks.
And that's but 1 month from today.
That is 1 month from today.
Sounds great.
Well, Randall, thank you very much for talking to us. And
Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Yes, and Randall Terrell is with Equality Texas, which is up there in Austin, and they work on political advocacy for the entire state, but specifically working on the legislature. And now that they're in session, Randall's certainly going to be kept very busy. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Living up, living up, living up proud.
Canadian lesbian duo from Vancouver, and that was recorded last year. The artist is Sugar Beach, and the title of the song, Living Out Proud. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Well, I don't know about y'all, but in the month of February, I get reminded of Mardi Gras. And here in Houston, we have a special organization that puts on its own special Mardi Gras. Tonight, joining me in the studio with Jennifer Renee is the president of this organization. His name is Don Hurst. Don, say hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, what is the name of your organization? I'm sure everybody out there knows what it's called.
Crew of Olympus, Texas, Inc.
Okay, you say that, Crew of Olympus, Texas, Inc.
Yes.
As to imply that maybe it was originally Crew of Olympus.
It was.
And why did you take this Texas at the end, and what's the history behind the organization?
Well, when it was originated in New Orleans in 1970, it was named the Crew of Olympus.
Right.
But then when it was moved to Houston, the people that brought it to Houston renamed it Crew of Olympus, Texas, Inc., and that was the new organization, and it was to celebrate Mardi Gras Texas style.
Now, why would you ever move a crew out of New Orleans, the home of all things Mardi Gras?
Well, in the 1980s, as we all know, we were having a problem with the AIDS epidemic. And a lot of the members, they were losing membership. Mm-hmm. And the membership got to the point that a lot of the members were living in Houston and traveling to New Orleans to put on shows.
Oh.
And so they decided that since the membership was depleting in New Orleans, to move it to Houston, and that's when the name was changed.
I got you. Probably because of the medical facilities here, and there was more health care here back then.
Well, it was mainly because of loss of the members. There were not enough members to continue the organization and put on a show. So the ones that were doing it lived here, so they brought it here.
Right. Now,
I know it's historically, and this is just a little naive. When you say crew, and that's it's K-R-E-W-E, and what does crew mean?
Crew to me means a group of people organized to, in our organization, to put on a show, and we have a Mardi Gras theme, and that's what we do. It's
okay.
A band of people. That's
now, for our listeners that may have never been to a Crew of Olympus event, the ball,
mm-hmm.
can you tell us more about that and kind of what goes into putting that on?
Well, months before the ball, the members begin to create their costumes. Each member is given a costume based on an overall theme,
mm-hmm.
which is given to us by the captain. That is elected for that ball. The ball itself is a tableau ball because it all the costumes surround a theme.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ball this year is called Wings. And so an awful lot of our costumes that will be presented evolve around the theme Wings.
I bet there are going to be a lot of fairies with wings and glitter and everything.
There are going to be a lot of fairies. There are going to be a lot of birds. There are going to be a lot of feathers, sequins, and glitter.
I'll have to dig out my wings and my boa.
So the captain gives you the theme, and then each, I guess, team comes with their own concept and kind of their own costume, or how does that
work? It's not a team. For instance, I was given, my partner and I were given a topic.
Mm-hmm.
And each of the members that do what we call a major costume, you may have a drawing or you may bring a picture to the captain, which is approved. And then from that, you go away and however you visualize this topic, then that's what you bring to the ball floor.
Mm-hmm.
And many times we don't know what a person, what the interpretation is going to be. So we're surprised, too.
I've been to a couple of these things, and the costumes are very elaborate, over the top, and
just that's the best part, I think, is just seeing the costumes that come out in the show. Now, where do you help? Where is this going to be held?
The ball this year is going to be at the Reliant Park and the Exhibit Hall A, I believe.
Yeah, it used
That's
to be
a big place.
It is.
It used to be at George R. Brown, right?
It used to be at George R. Brown. We've had it in various locations at the George R. Brown, but for 2 years we had it in the George Bush Ballroom.
how appropriate.
How ironic, I know.
But we have now been 2 years at the Reliant Park. This year we're going to be in the new location, the newer exhibit hall, as opposed to one of the older ones.
Okay, so if we have listeners out there that may want to attend this, can anybody go to this, or how does that work?
Basically, each member, and we're now 63 members strong this year, each member is allotted 10 invitations, and basically it's a black tie affair by invitation only, but invitations are available because recently we had our 12th night party, which kicks off Mardi Gras, and we had a waiting list, so to speak, and people that came to the 12th night party and wanted to attend the ball but had not been seated by a member, they put their names on, and I'm currently working with that list to get those people seated with cancellations or vacant seats. There's no charge for attending the ball. Again, it's a black tie affair by invitation only, but there's no charge. The only thing that we ask our guests to do is to contribute to the collection midway through the ball, and those charitable collections then are divided among our charities, which we have already selected for the year.
Okay, what organizations this year?
Colt 45's Assistance Fund, Pet Patrol, and Assist Hers are the three that we're sponsoring this year.
Good. Those are great organizations.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how do you select those organizations?
At the beginning of our fiscal year, which will be April 1, we send out requests for people to submit all of the documentation, mainly the 501c3s. Mm-hmm. And they submit an application with all the appropriate documents. And then the crew members actually interview these people. Someone comes forward and makes the presentation of the program that they want to sponsor, or want us to sponsor. And the members then vote on the ones that they want. And normally in the last couple of years, we have tried to come up with at least three to sponsor. We try to go for the ones that maybe don't get public funding or grants because the amount of money that we get from the contribution on the floor divided by three people, we want to be able to make an impact, right. And that's the way we do it.
Now, you have this great ball this weekend. What other events do you have throughout the year?
Through the year, we have several other fundraisers, and we kicked off this year with a Sorted Lives a party, which was really fun.
I heard about that.
And, yes, we went the full gamut and had a casket and everything, but it was a fun party. And then we had also, since we had the Olympics this year, we had an Olympic party.
Oh.
And the two main parties that we have year after year are the Fado Day party, which is a Cajun festival, and the crew members prepare all the food, we serve the food, and it's a fun affair. And then, of course, we end with 12th Night, which is the beginning or the kickoff of the Mardi Gras season.
Very good. Now, if we have some listeners that might be interested in becoming a member of the crew, how does that work?
I think the best way to find out about membership would be to visit our website.
Oh.
And
plug that.
What's the website, www.MardiGrasTexas.com.
Okay.
And there is an area that you can go to for membership. There's an application form, and it also tells you a little bit about membership, what is expected of a crew member, and what their involvement can or does not have to be. And so that's one way. The other way is at all of the parties through the year, mainly our appreciation party, which is coming up the end of next month. We have applications, and that's really where we kick off the membership drive for the coming year.
Right.
Our year goes from April 1 through March 31.
So after the ball, you start the next year, I guess?
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
Now, I know for the Pride Parade, y'all always come out with a big old float.
And y'all do a good job.
Y'all do.
I judged them last year.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
I'm impressed.
Well, our floats through the years and past years have been very large, and we're proud of it. We've won a few trophies over the years. All of our members, of course, are volunteers. So we have members that create the design, and then everybody constructs it, and we put it on in the parade. And we've never had a commercial built float. It's always been built by the members. And normally we go out extensively for lighting the float. However, with the economy, the way it's been in the last couple of years, we've kind of downsized the floats. But anybody that wants to see what we have done in the past can go to the website, and there's a photo gallery of past floats and winners, and you can see those.
Well, that'd be very interesting, because I know the transgender community puts together one, and I know there's a lot of work and effort, and volunteers are so difficult to get, especially on this time. It's always, people are always there for the party and the fun, but when the work is there, it's hard to get those volunteers for the work.
Where did everybody go?
Yeah, where did everybody go?
Well, with us, it's more the last couple of years. We had a horse-drawn carriage, and the carriage was lit. And we normally feature our royalty for the year, and they were riding. And then there's a walking contingency, which normally, if you are familiar with the crew, we're throwing beads or gently tossing beads into the crowd.
Exactly. Now, Don, what else would you like our listeners to know about the crew?
Well, we are a fun group. I joined 10 years ago, and to me, it's an extended family of friends that I really enjoy. It gives you an outlet for artistic, anything you want to do in creating costumes or in that light. So I really appreciate the friendships that I've developed, and also the involvement in the community. It gives you, if you really work with the crew and get out and work for the crew, then you meet an awful lot of people in the community, and that's very very good.
So if we want to go this weekend, what would be my best thing to do?
Well, if you want to go this weekend, you're probably looking at the person right now that is in charge of seating.
You got to know somebody.
You got to know somebody.
Well, I was trying to, you know, if there's anybody else out there, too, that might say, they just heard about it. This sounds great.
The best thing to do is to, if you think you're interested in going to the ball, then if you know a member, get in touch with a member. If you don't know a member, then go to the website and use the email address address on the website to request and see if there is any seating. At this point in the game, it's very tight.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting pretty tight. We normally have in the neighborhood something under 1,000 people
it's
at this
incredible.
Function.
It's huge. That's it's huge. Wonderful.
And so it's tight.
Yeah. And what's that website one last time?
Yes.
Before we say goodbye.
Website is www.MardiGrasTexas.com and the email is crew. K-R-E-W-E at MardiGrasTexas.com.
Thank you so much, Don. It's a pleasure meeting you, and don't forget about the event this weekend.
Thank you, Don.
Thank
this
you.
This is Queer Voices.
Why do you have to talk like that? And why do you have to walk like that? Why do you have to say those things? And why do you wear so many rings? You've got them coming out of your ears and your nose, from your belly button down to your toes. And in between, I don't want to know. I'll be okay as long as they don't show. Why do you have to be so gay? Why do you have to be so gay?
Okay, I know. I read somewhere that it all started with those colored hankies.
Colored hankies.
You see, if a guy wore one in his left pocket, he gay. And if he wore it in his right, then he received the spanky.
Receiver.
Something like that.
You are my son, not my daughter.
Okay, so just answer me one question.
Okay.
Was it something that I did?
Oh, come
or
on.
Is it something that your father did?
Mom.
Or is it when you were born where we just...
Mom, just shut up.
It is nothing, it is all, it is love, it's beautiful, it's still love. Had the inspiration within my soul, but when I saw him, I knew I would never find the strength to let him go. Like an angel, he came through the rock and the rain. It was my heart. I was and I am, from now to the end of for him, till death do us part. Up and let me in. In love, oh, I'm in love. We the people try to form a more perfect union, hand in hand. I stand beside him in sickness and in health, for rich or poor, through thick and thin. Telling you what it is we're in. We're in love, oh, we're in love. Go to hell and back again, and then tell me what it is I'm in. It's still love, oh, it's still love. It is nothing, it is all, it is life, it's beautiful. It's still love. It is not-
nothing, it is all. It is love, it's beautiful.
Jimmy Worm from his album Last Chance, It's Still Love. And before that, that fun little song by Von Tanner called So Gay from 2007. This is Queer Voices.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about history. And Ryan Riddle is with us, and history in the term of digitalization, exactly what is that all about?
Okay, well, it's a lot more than just the digital. In fact, one of the things that we know about the history that we have is that it's in tons of forms, like books, papers, photos, memories that haven't even gotten down into some format yet. And one of the things that I was glad y'all invited us here to talk about today is the work that's already being done to preserve that history and how we can make that move forward, help it move forward, and help ensure the history that we do have and help ensure that it survives.
So tell us.
Okay. Well, there's been a long set of conversations in Houston about how to do that, and there's a recent ripple in those conversations that I was really glad that y'all invited us here to talk about. Some folks had been seeing things happen over town over the last few years, like there was a flood that damaged the Botts archive not too long ago. Pride Houston has been very conscientious about creating a history tent over the last few years. And this has created a sense of kind of historical consciousness bubbling up a little bit.
Nostalgia.
More. Nostalgia, maybe. And also a sense that what's going to happen to this stuff? Maybe I've got stuff in my attic, or you, Brian's got stuff in yours, or Jack, you've got...
I got boxes of cassettes of the show.
Yeah. More than boxes of
cassettes.
I think
I have old twits and all kinds of old...
Yeah. So, like, buttons and t-shirts and drag dresses and Mr. Prime Choice leather vests, all of these things are part of our history, right? And we don't know where they all are. We really don't. We know some people have done a really good job of getting them together, like the Gulf Coast Archive and Museum. They've done a great job of assembling some materials. The Botts Collection at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church has.
So we have these fragmented collections that are kind of all over the city, and there's things maybe we don't know about. So this is an effort to kind of unite that and go into the next century and kind of...
Exactly, and updating it for the 21st century, exactly. Because here's part of the problem, right? How often, Jack, can you make it out to Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church?
Almost never.
Okay.
Yeah, that's on the other side of the bayou.
Yeah, and I don't know how often maybe the volunteers who run these organizations can make an appointment to take people out to the warehouse where, you know, Gulf Coast Archive and Museum keeps their stuff, right?
And we're now in a process of being able to go to Wikipedia and just about find anything.
I know. And so why not take advantage of that little trend that people already have at their fingertips and bring this stuff that's a little bit out of their way a little bit closer to home? And that was the idea. A conversation has kind of started to get going in the community about, well, what would it look like if we had some kind of website made by the community, for the community, and maintained by community members, governed by the community, that had our own history. What would that look like?
So is it like a blog where people can just user-generate stuff and upload that, or is it kind of controlled?
Well, see, it might have that component to it, right? Say, you know, you have a particular memory because you were here from, say, that time when people marched downtown to protest Anita Bryant when she was singing at the hotel. You might have been there. You might have a memory of that night. That might be something that you could write up there and put it up onto a wiki page, right?
Or maybe you took a picture.
Maybe you took a picture. Or maybe you happened to be around for that historic occasion when Lawrence and Gardner celebrated their Supreme Court victory on the steps of City Hall. And you've got some of your own pictures that you might want to upload to the website. That's the kind of thing that we're thinking. Not just academic history, right? Because there are people who are very good at doing that part. But we as a community, all of us have been here to see these events. And we've got our own stories to tell.
So who is we?
We, we, that's a really big we, actually. There's a number of people who've already been talking about this, and the conversation that's happened most recently was at the Houston Public Library downtown this last Wednesday.
And unfortunately, we couldn't have you on last Wednesday because we weren't on last Monday.
Yeah, so, well, yes, you know, occasionally, you know, scheduling things get in the way, right? So this conversation ended up being pretty cool. About 25 people came out from very different places in the community. Some of them are academics, some of them are not. Some of them were lawyers. We had people from the different universities. We had people from organizations like the Political Caucus. There are people who are from PFLAG. There are people from the Houston Transgender Unity Committee. All of them coming together just to have a conversation about, well, if we did a project like this, a website to have our history, how would we want it to be? And one of the big things we realized out of that conversation was that not everybody who needed to be part of the conversation was part of the conversation yet. And one of the things I was very happy, Jack, when you invited us to come and talk, was to let people know that that conversation is happening and moving forward in some pretty interesting ways.
And how can we get connected to that conversation?
Well, it's interesting. There's going to be another mass meeting that will be scheduled for March 25th. The place has yet to be confirmed, although we are looking at a time slot of about 6:30 to 8:30. And to get more information, and as we post things, there's two ways you could find out about it. We are planning to have a press release go out that will make the Outsmart issue in time for that. We are also planning to let everybody at KPFT know about it, of course, because you've been very kind and supportive of these kinds of conversations. But there are two places where you can have additional information. There's a phone number at Rice University in the Center for the Study of Women, Gender, and Sexuality. You may call 713-348-2162. And at that phone number, you'll be able to get updated. If you'd like, please also give us your email if you call into that number, and we can add you to the email list that is circulating for this. The other place that you can go for information right now is to my email, which is my last name followed by my first two initials, and you can call and get that information. It's a little hard to get
on there.
You
don't want to give that out, do you?
No.
Okay. We'll post it on the Queer Voices website.
We can do that. That would be great. So that conversation...
Yeah, we'll post your email.
No. Yeah, that email. I'd rather post that out somewhere. Yeah, I'm a little shy about that. No, I'm kidding. It's just kind of weird taking down emails over the air. It's a hard thing to do. So the phone number is the best way. And again, that's 713-348-2162. So, and that ongoing conversation, what we're hoping to do is to have it take the next step forward, because we've realized that there are a ton of questions at stake here about how to do this properly. There's legal issues, right?
Yes.
There's copyright. Maybe someone has the permissions to something. Maybe there's also content suggestions that people have, right? There's specific areas they know that they've got resources. We'd love to hear about that. There's also immense IT issues, right? Because it's one thing to say, oh, let's put on a wiki, but how do you do it? Where do you host it? How does the material actually get up there? There's also questions about fundraising. There's got to be a way to pay for websites and their funding. And there's also questions about governance, right? How do we maintain a long-term community presence for that? One of the real questions is, we've gotten a lot of great volunteer work put into this, as we all know very well. People like Dalton DeHart, his photography has really been a record for our community.
He is the community historian.
Exactly, right? Exactly. And then we have people like Ray Hill, who if you tap him for a story, he will be able to tell you at great length exactly how something happened.
Exactly.
People like Sarah Fernandez have gone out and made videos of people seeing the kinds of ways that their lives have worked. Arden Eversmeyer, she's done a lot of great work. Individuals have done a lot of great work. But what happens once these individuals with passion find that for some reason they need to move on?
And what is the urgency, right, of doing it now?
Well, what hasn't been the urgency, right? That's the point. We're always late to this. We're always late. And it's kind of like there's been this feeling that a lot of people have gotten interested about it, and it's enough of a critical mass that maybe now is the right time.
It's also the fact that some of the people are up in age, and we may lose them, and may lose their...
Well, I'm also thinking of the people we've already lost, right? We're, like I say, we're always late to that, so let's get it going now. And one of the beautiful parts about the way the conversation's been going so far is that it recognizes that there are a lot of moving pieces to this. One piece of it is the oral history piece, you know, collecting stories from people whose stories have not yet been collected somehow, right? And also preserving those physical things that are kind of in danger of maybe getting lost, mm-hmm. right? Scanning those, digitizing those. And that's, like you say, what the digitizing part was. And in a way, because there are all of these questions about how best to do it collectively, governance, etc., what do we want to collect, right?
So these are a lot of really good questions.
Mm-hmm.
And as this committee moves on, there's hoping to get some answers to these questions.
Exactly.
And to keep everybody in the community sort of like, well, maybe this organization can do this, and this organization can do this, and maybe we can hopefully all work together so that the sum of all the pieces is more...
Correct.
And we'd love to, we'll continue this conversation, and we'll talk about this before the next meeting.
Perfect.
And we'll also post it on the website once we get the information about where this meeting is going to... And right now, it's basically open to everybody.
It is precisely open to everybody. That is the nature and the design of the idea.
So if you're gay and you have some sort of history about...
If you're straight and you have some sort of history about the LGBT community, it is a very open idea.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, Brian Riedel, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much for making some
time. And we do want to get into this in much more detail, and I'd certainly like to talk to you about some of the things you're personally doing about the history of the community in a future episode.
That would be great.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
I want to be the leading man sometime. It's not that I am uncommitted, I work hard to get it right. But not enough, it seems, to win this fight. Still I go on and on, believing in myself, 'cause I am strong, so strong. But it's always someone else. Someone who will listen? Is there someone who will try to make sense of all these hurtful lies? I don't want to be forgiven, I just want my piece of the pie. So brother, can you look me in the eye? Say I'm wrong, so wrong, believing in my love when it's so strong, so strong. Harder.
CD, Skins and Shirts. The artist, Steve France. The title, When Is It My Turn? This is Queer Voices.
Well, earlier we were talking about Mardi Gras, and that's in the month of February. The other thing in February is, of course, Valentine's Day, which may be a good thing, may be a bad thing for those that may or may not have plans.
You mean if you don't have someone? Well, is that what you're... Are you trying to hurt me?
Well, I'm here to offer an option for those who may find themselves in this situation.
Oh. Hey, I'll have you know that I need a man like a bowling ball needs fishing hooks.
Okay. Well, we're moving
well,
right along.
Well, on that note, let's talk about Valentine's Day.
Joining us in the studio tonight is James Oxford, the publicity director of Impact Houston, which is a great organization that's kind of done a lot of stuff in the past, but now you're kind of moving forward with these events.
That's right.
Welcome, James.
Thank you.
How are you? I know we don't have a lot of time, but kind of let our listeners know what's going on with this event.
Okay. On February 14th, Impact Houston is going to be hosting what's going to be gay speed dating. And so we're going to have about 24 men, 24 women, and we're all going to gather it's going to be from 7:30 to 10:30. And there's going to be hors d'oeuvres and appetizers and desserts. And it's going to kind of be a mix between mingling with everybody and then a mix of speed dating. So even if you don't find somebody that's your special significant other there, you can at least meet
your
friends.
How did you pick these people?
How do we pick who's going to...
Yeah, who are those 24 people?
It's going to be the people that sign up at our website.
Okay.
And
what's the website?
It is impacthouston.wetpaint.com. And then there's a link there to the actual where you can purchase tickets.
I see. So just anyone that's out there listening can go to...
So you'll keep it in what ratio?
50-50. So okay. it's 24 men, 24 women. And once we reach that amount, we cut it off.
So it could be filled up right now.
Exactly. Yes,
now,
exactly.
How long is the speed dating, timing for each?
It's actually when they first get there at 7:30, we're going to have about a half-hour mingling of everybody.
Okay, and so everybody can, like, scope and say, ooh, that's the one.
Exactly. And then we're going to have half the group's going to go down, half the women, half the men go down, and have about an hour of speed dating. The other half will stay up and mingle.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll have another half hour of mingling of everybody, and then the other half of the men and women will come down and do an hour of speed dating, and then the night will be finished from there. And then we'll contact everyone afterwards and let them know if there was any connections made.
Now, what is this event called? I was reading something.
It's called Single Smash.
Single Smash. Yeah. And so this is a fundraiser for Impact Houston?
Yeah, this is a fundraiser just because we do a lot of events, and so there's things where you have to pay for parks and permits and things for where we hold some of our events. So we're trying to start. And we've only been around maybe 3 months. I think our first event was in November. So
the big old protest.
Exactly.
In City Hall. Yeah.
Exactly. So we're trying to start raising some funds so we can start doing more.
Now, is there a Facebook page that people can go to?
There's actually a Facebook page for Impact Houston. So if they look for Impact Houston, they'll find it. And then there's a link there to the actual website where they can buy tickets.
That's all the rage these days.
Facebook. Exactly.
Everybody's going to be on Facebook.
A great tool. Great tool.
And again, where was it going to be?
It's going to be actually the home of Karen Durr. It's on Columbia and 5th Street in the Heights.
Columbia 5th Street.
What's so she's going to have? Does she just have a big house, or?
It's big enough for this event.
I'm sure as a realtor, she has a huge house.
And all the details and the address and everything are on the website as well.
That's nice of her to host that.
She is.
We love her.
Friend of ours.
What plans do y'all have? I know you do a lot of events and the like, and what work are y'all planning in the near future?
We're hoping to either end of March, early April, we're wanting to have actually a family-themed gathering, probably in a park, and have face painters and really try to reach out to the entire community, not only GLBT, but GLBT-friendly and supporters, and have everybody come out, bring their family, not be a protest, not be a demonstration, but be kind of a celebration and everything.
Yes, the first day of spring, it falls on a weekend this year.
And that would be
a great weekend to do it.
So something like that, and then bi-monthly, we're trying to always have something going on.
So this is kind of a part of your continuing events.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So for our listeners out there that may not have a date for Valentine's, this is a perfect event for you. It's called the Single Smash.
Correct.
And there's information on the website.
Yep. Impacthouston.wetpaint.com. And look for us on Facebook as well.
Facebook, yes. Well, James, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about? this event or the organization? Or?
You know, this is actually a free organization. There's no membership dues, so anyone who's out there wanting to get involved in GLBT advocacy,
it seems like a younger organization. Not that I'm old, but
well, you know, I will say that we're really trying to reach out to everyone. So right now we do have a younger group, but we're really trying to, no matter what age, we want anybody who's not been involved before.
This is the time. It's very inspiring to see all these kind of younger generations stepping up and being active in the community.
Exactly.
We appreciate you coming.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I hope it's a very big success.
I hope so too. I appreciate
all right.
it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
For your voices.
The principal of a school in northern Thailand determined late last year that between 10 and 20% of his students identified as transgender. So, in addition to the blue bathrooms for boys and pink ones for girls, he established a third. Its doors are half blue and half pink. For some insights into trans life in the Southeast Asian country, Radio Netherlands human rights reporter Jonathan Gruber talked with activist Sutitra Simsiriwong, who told him he could just call her Crystal.
Well, Crystal, what do you think of the school's initiative of putting in a separate toilet for transgender children?
You have to understand that the school is for boys and girls. So when boys is not a boy anymore and boys want to dress as a woman, they might act as a girls. But when they get into the girls' toilet, all the girls cannot accept them to use the same toilet as they use. And when this kind of group go to the boys' toilet, they feel that they might be threatened by all the boys when they want to use the same toilet as their group. So this is the problem that the master of the school feel this is a real. So they have to confront with the problem by accepting the truth and build the third toilet and try to show people that this school it's really care of all the students, no matter who you are or no matter what they are.
So what I'm hearing here is that you like the idea of the separate transgender toilet.
Yes, actually, we love the idea, but this is just only the beginning of the story. Because when the students, when they grow up and they just like graduated from the school, they might not want to get back to this toilet anymore. Because once that they can choose the way that they want to live, they will choose to be a man or a woman. If they want to be a man, they can be a gay. And if they want to live as a woman, they will dress as a woman and they will become a transgender. And when they become transgender, they will go to the woman's toilet. But the reason why we have the transgender toilet in the school, because these kids are too young to have the hormone therapy. These kids are too young to have the operation properly. So that's why we have to have the third toilet for them.
Crystal, in most of the world, there is a stigma attached to being transgender. How is it in Thailand?
In Thailand, if you are transgender, you have to be very beautiful. That's the only one thing that it's the characteristic of transgender. If you are not, you have trouble.
Crystal, are you saying to me that if you want to be transgender, it's fine, but only if you're beautiful?
Of course, like when you come out from the closet, your parents will be really sad about our decision. But in Thai society, it's okay for you to be a transgender because it's your business. But if you're a transgender, you have to be very beautiful because...
What happens if you're not?
You will be blamed by all the people that why you are really ugly and why you are not as beauty as others. So that's why plastic surgery is really popular in all transgender women.
Why is Thailand different from other countries?
Because we have the best transgender shows in the world. And we have the most beautiful transgender women in the world. We have the best hospital to operate or the sexual operation in the world. So this land can transform the man to woman easily. and be able to make them as beauty as possible. When you see my pictures, I'm just the average of the transgender in this society. But if you see the beauty pageant of the transgender woman, you will be amazed by all the pictures that you can't believe that this used to be a man before.
So let me just see if I understand you correctly. You're saying that the acceptance of transgenderism in Thai society is directly related to how successful Thai society has been able to transform men into women, at least on the outside.
Yes.
Wow, that's I think there's a lesson there to be learned from other countries, that if you want to get transgenderism accepted in your society, you better make sure that they're beautiful.
That's why when we try to get together as a Thai transgender woman group and to meet all the press, we try to educate the society in Thailand that to be a transgender woman, you don't have to be beautiful. We can be a lawyer, we can be an accountant, we can be a beauty advisor, we can be a doctor. So the concept of transgender is changing now. You don't have to be very beautiful, but you have to have a brain to survive in this society.
Well, it sounds to me like Thai society is making tremendous progress with regards to your rights. How do people treat you today, Crystal?
They don't notice that I'm a transgender woman. They thought I'm just a normal woman. So that's why they don't have to treat me exceptionally unless I show my identity cards.
What happens when you show your identity card?
Last year, I went into the club on the basement of the Novotel Hotel. So when I show my identity cards, the receptionist told me, "Sorry, we are not welcome the transgender."
Oh, and what did you say?
I said, okay, thank you very much, and see you on Monday.
What do you mean, see you on Monday? You were going to come back and try again?
No, I called the Bangkok Rainbow Organization. So I asked for the lawyer that do all the human rights. And when I tell all the story, they asked me, "Are you ready to appear on the news?" I said, "Yes." So the press release was done and spread to all the newspaper. And I appeared on the first page of all the newspaper in Thailand.
And what happened then?
The Bangkok Rainbow Organization has the campaign with 24 of the Asian gay and lesbian organization and asked for the Novotel group to remove all the gay friendly tag on the website, in every single website to all over the world, and all the conference room or the seminar cancelled.
Really? And have they changed their policy?
Yes, I request them to have the press conference just to apologize me. This is the first time of my life that I was treated like that, so I have to fight for the rights. And my case get into the drafting of the constitution of Thailand, so it's really like the right time and the right person and the right way.
Suchidat Simsirawang, or Crystal, thank you very much. You were a delightful guest.
Thank you very much.
Jonathan Gruber is a human rights reporter for Radio Netherlands.
Hello, this is the actor Michael Emerson. I play Ben on Lost. It's not easy being one of the others, so if time travel or moving the island isn't an option and you're feeling sort of lost, try listening to Greg and Lucia on This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
A new This Way Out update has been posted on our website. For recent programming information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to www.thiswayout.org.
Discrimination, exclusion, hate crimes, drug abuse, suicide. It's a depressing outlook for most of Kenya's closeted LGBT community. They're intimidated by the law there making homosexuality a crime punishable by up to 14 years in prison. But some people believe things can change. Pauline Kimani is a 23-year-old equal rights activist and one of Kenya's few out lesbians. This Way Out's Arusha Topazini met Kimani in Nairobi.
I should be living in a world that's ideal for me. And everybody else should have that right of living in a world that they define ideal for themselves.
No, you can't make me sacrifice my freedom of choice.
Pauline Kimani smiles and sits back as Annie DiFranco's militant melodies sweep across the room. In work as in leisure, Pauline is serious and committed, a choice she made early in life. At the age of 16, Pauline told her family she was lesbian.
I felt afraid because for a long time I had heard stories, especially in schools or with my mom, that attraction between people of the same sex wasn't normal and it was considered evil and un-African.
Pauline's mother took her for therapy where she was given antidepressants to cure her. Her sister accused her of bringing shame to the family. Her father accepted her choice but died soon after. Only her younger brother Edwin has stood by Pauline over the years, respecting both her sexuality and activism.
I feel saddened that you can judge someone by his or her sexual preferences. At the end of the day, let your inside be judged, not your sexuality.
7 years down the line, her sister is more reconciled with Pauline's sexuality, but her relationship with her mother is still fraught with pain.
Having my mom come from a very Christian background and read and translate and interpret the Bible the way everybody else is doing gives her grounds for which to hate the lesbian in me. But I expect her to challenge her bias judgment, because in the end, it's the same Bible that's about preaching love.
In Kenya, homosexuality is considered a crime both against Christianity and Islam, with many churches running sexual orientation conversions and systematically banning homosexuals from attending service. American conservative pastors who regularly tour and have daily television shows in Kenya have also solidified homophobic beliefs.
And people will not think beyond the boxes that have been put, male and female. And if we use the same binaries to challenge the existence of diversity, then we will never get to a point where we embrace diversity as a total. And we will never be able to define ourselves as a society that includes everyone.
A splash of color against a background that is black or white. This is how flatmate Rosaline Odoyo, a 24-year-old law graduate, describes Pauline.
Pauline is the only gay person I know in Kenya that has put a face to what she stands for. The idea of two women being together sexually is still being downplayed as a sexual fantasy for men. Once you put your foot down and say, actually, you know, this is my way of life, the Kenyan way starts to feel threatened.
Pauline moved in with Rosaline in September. She'd just been attacked and threatened in her neighborhood after appearing on Kenya's first talk show on homosexuality. She decided to leave. It wasn't the first time, says Pauline, nor does she expect it to be the last.
In being a lesbian and being open about it, I have had to pay the price of rebelling against societal norms. And the first time was when I came out to a group of boys in my class. I was in college then. One of them had always wanted to have a relationship with me.
Pauline waits until everyone has left the room before continuing with her story. She and her four friends went out and back to her place for drinks. The event was meant to celebrate her coming out. She then offered to drive them back home.
Almost approaching one of the guys' house, one of them just grabbed me from behind, and then they started ripping my clothes apart, and that's the time that they ripped me.
Pauline did not tell anyone about it and did not report it. She then tried to commit suicide, and soon after she was raped again by an unknown group of boys on campus. It's nothing new, she says. Rape has always been used to intimidate assertive women in Kenya, like feminists and female politicians.
There's this belief that if a lesbian had sex with a man, then they will be cured of their lesbianism. The question of sexual violence against women, whether they're lesbian or any kind of women, and for that matter, transgendered people and very feminine gay men. People feel threatened by the idea of something they are not used to.
But some of life's best lessons I learned at the worst times.
Surviving these attacks, says Pauline, has given her the strength to keep on fighting for LGBT and women's rights, which is why she joined Kenya's gay coalition within a month of its creation 2 years ago. From the onset, the coalition decided to prioritize on HIV healthcare and treatment.
And in 2006, the Gay and Lesbian Coalition was invited to the National AIDS Control Council when they accepted that the MSM community, or the men who have sex with men, needed special attention as a vulnerable group within the HIV/AIDS epidemic.
Studies estimate that sex between men account for the transmission of at least 5 to 10% of HIV cases in Kenya, with many gay men leading double lives as married heterosexuals. Yet HIV counseling and treatment programs have been systematically geared towards heterosexuals, and cases of LGBT people being denied healthcare are very common amongst the community. One of the major breakthroughs for Kenya's Gay Coalition was to partner up with Liverpool VCT, the only HIV counseling and treatment center in Kenya, to cater to LGBT people.
And people feel more comfortable talking about the gay community as related to HIV and how we can work towards prevention, treatment and care of everybody for universal access to HIV and AIDS programs. HIV and AIDS has been like an entry point for the gay community to start engaging or to start having dialogues with the larger society and the government on the issues relating to the LGBTI rights in Kenya.
Pauline marched at the 2006 World AIDS Day when Kenya's Gay Coalition went public for the first time. And then at the 2007 World Social Forum, where also for the first time, LGBT people from the East African community reclaimed public space to demand their rights. If not any social recognition, at least people now know we exist, says Pauline Kimani.
No, you can't make a sacrifice of freedom of choice.
Reporting from Nairobi in the East African country of Kenya, I'm Arusha Topatini for This Way Out.
You can find the website for the Gay and Lesbian Coalition of Kenya at www.galck.org. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Chris Wilson, Pam Marshall, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Michael Emerson, Sherry Lunn, and Alicia Topazzini contributed program material. Thanks also to Jonathan Gruber and Eric Boschema at Radio Netherlands. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WGDR Plainfield, Vermont,
3. Been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
KP KPFT is seeking listeners for its program council. The KPFT Program Council is an advisory body founded in 2005 to give broader community input on programming. The council works with KPFT's management around a myriad of programming matters. If you would like to be considered for the program council, visit kpft.org. You should be prepared to submit a short narrative that includes why you're interested in participating in the program council, and make plans to attend an upcoming local station board meeting to speak to the board, which votes on your nomination. At kpft.org, you will find full information about the program council, what it does, and how you can be considered for a listener position. In addition, KPFT is looking for members of its community advisory board. The CAB.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.